It's your boy Pete Walsh, back again, episode 28 of the Respect the Game podcast. I got my boy Abe Schwadger with me. Abe, what's good?
Everything, man. Just keeping it moving.
Yeah, and we're very, very privileged, very lucky to have one of our favorite players, one of our favorite Twitter users, Kenny, Mr. Chibs Anderson. It was nice enough to stop by. Kenny, how you doing, sir?
What's up, my guys? Good to be here, man. Good to be here.
It's great to have you, man. So, yeah, just right from the jump, you know, the Mr. Chibs documentary is finished, premiered Friday night. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about, you know, your time in New York the last week and what you've been up to promoting the movie and all that.
Oh, it's been great, man. Definitely, you know, want to give some love to Doc NYC Film Festival out of New York. They accepted it. They loved it. And they premiered it. So, you know, it's been a great week for me. I had butterflies. I didn't know how, you know, people was going to view it, but I got some great reviews. Real candid, open with my life. Just wanted, you know, to reach out, just pay it forward for some guys that may be, you know, going down the same path I went down. Maybe it can help them. And being a child prodigy out of New York, it's been awesome, man. I've been getting a lot of love here.
Cool. Obviously, like, without giving too much away, are there certain scenes or like parts of the movie that are like your favorite?
No, you know what? I don't have no favorite. It's just that it all. You know, I give a lot of love and credit to Jill Campbell, my director, because we got so much footage.
Yeah,
you know, I got so much basketball footage, but it wasn't about so much. It was not a highlight reel about basketball. It's about my life. So she did a great storyline with me and all my mishaps, as far as some of my it wasn't so much basketball failures, but my real life failures. You know, my kids, failed marriages, financially going through a lot of money. It takes on a whole life lessons for an NBA star, college star, high school star. Usually, guys don't want to open up to. You know, they feel ashamed or embarrassed to open up to help someone. But, you know, I retired, and when my mother passed away in 2005, I just had a different perspective.
Just speaking on that, though, like, are there parts that are that, like, you cringe or that are hard to watch now, or is it all just kind of, you know, part of your journey?
Well, you know, I came out about 4 years ago when I was molested, abused. That probably was still the hardest, but it's also therapy, you know, for me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's just something I had to deal with. You know, I covered it up for like 30-something years, so I had to, you know, come out with it. And, you know, all these interviews I was doing last week, I had some radio shows, the call-ins, and it was amazing because I touched a lot of people. Mm-hmm. People called in, and was one woman was like, hey, my son was holding this for 20-something years and heard you speak and just opened up to me. Thank you.
Yeah.
That made my day that day. I was like, oh, that made my day because it's just one person that, you know, because who I am and the platform I was on, you know, being an NBA All-Star and, you know, X amount of money and being in the paper, being famous, you know, that people don't think that it don't happen to us, but it does. We're human beings.
Right.
And my mother, she would wanted me to come forth, you know, and help others.
No, that's great. And then, you know, I take it this was the first movie you've been in or been a part of?
No, it's like my documentary story. Yeah. So it's not, you know, I've done some acting. You know, I think last year, 2 years, I did the Wake Up Call with The Rock
TNT.
That was great, too. You know, I've done throughout my time, I don't even know, I might have forgot some roles that I played in, you know, some cameos and stuff that I made. Yeah. But this is my life story, and it means a lot, you know, to me because it's going to help others.
Yeah, and I know, I mean, I think it took, what, about 4 to 4 or 5 years to get this all done. So, you know, during that process, was there anything, you know, that surprised you about the movie-making process, surprised you about how much work went into it? Like, how much were the cameras on you over that period of time?
4 years. Jill Campbell, Barry Greenstein, we got so much footage. They saw me at my darkest times. Had to edit some of that stuff. I was real raw and open, and then some of it maybe been too raw, so we had to calm it down. And then you only got like 88 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you got to put the most important pieces in that's going to touch someone that's going to help. So it's difficult, and I got it. You know, all my hats go off. My hat go off to them, my team.
Yeah, we just saw a headline that they're supposedly thinking about making a 10-hour long Michael Jordan documentary. So I'm sure that, like, even for you, you probably could have made, like, a 4-hour long documentary.
Jordan, you know, his history in the NBA and his brand.
Yeah.
Mine was very interesting. You know, even Jordan is the best, one of the best ever. But I ain't child prodigy. Some guys get it, you know, come late, have great college careers and go on and pro. But I did it from 10 years old all the way up until 35. You know, you could look at it, 14 years in the NBA, my numbers were solid. So a lot of guys haven't done it, you know, on every level.
Right.
So it'd just be unique. Mine's a little unique. And doing it in the Mecca, you know, basketball. I don't care what nobody say, New York is the best. Yeah. You know, right now we down as far as basketball. But being here as a kid playing, growing up, nothing like it.
I mean, we're going to get into all this. Abe and I both have so many questions to ask you. I was reading I was reading an interview with Jill, the director, and one of the quotes was, you know, to help raise money, you know, people really related to you on Twitter.
The
quote was that Kenny loves to tweet so much. So can you just, like, how did you, like, find Twitter? How come you like to use it so much?
Yeah. When it started.
Yeah.
How are you not verified yet?
I know. You know what? I think out loud a lot. I say some crazy stuff sometimes, so I'm happy I'm not.
Oh, okay.
In a way, I'm happy I'm not. I got my good about 13,000, 14. I'm good. Everybody know I'm good. I don't mean, because sometimes I lose it, and I'm so addicted to Twitter. I see guys say crazy thing that's verified. They put it on ESPN and all that. I don't want that.
True.
Good.
It's for, like, the true Twitter heads.
Yeah. I mean, we're addicted to Twitter, too.
Yeah, I'm addicted, man. I started it when they first came out. Mm-hmm. Was that 4 years ago?
I think 2009.
I started it. And I'm not a gadget person, but I got into it. I did it once, did it twice that day. I remember, like, and played with it. It started, you know, and then I can relate to my fans and support me when way back Georgia Tech days, high school days. I love social media. It's a blessing and a curse, because you can connect with some of my old friends from high school I've been connecting with, and guys I, you know, did life with in the NBA, coaches and all that. You don't know their numbers, but they find you on Twitter. And that's cool. But then again, you just got to watch what you say. How you react on that thing also. It could be a danger.
I mean, we may have even asked you this when we did the phoner before, but, like, do you wish that it existed when you were in the NBA, or are you kind of glad that it didn't?
I'm glad it didn't for me, because that's my life, you know, my lifestyle and everything. I was running around the city and all that. Nah, I'm glad it didn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, you said, like, you can relate to people on social media, and for those that don't follow Kenny, like, he truly means that. Like, he'll be at Publix, like, taking pictures with the deli guy.
Yo, my crew, man. My crew, Lynn, Michelle. I ain't been there all week. I missed them, man. Word, I'll be here usually because I'm retired, trying to figure out what I'm doing. Yeah. I got a training program. Mm-hmm. So my hours is different.
Yeah.
So I'll be in Publix twice a day, man, and I mess with everybody.
You're flexible, man.
Yeah, I'm flexible. Yeah. My schedule flexible. He knows. I tweet about everything. Yeah. I'll be like, what's going on? I just start tweeting, man.
Yeah, it's like anytime that you have a downtime.
Yeah, like that's
flick
worse.
The selfie up.
Yeah.
Well, wait, but you, I mean, you have 8 kids. Are they active on Twitter too?
Yeah, my daughter, one of my oldest daughters, my older daughter stopped, you know, she because I was following her. She's 26. My daughter Chrissy at Chrissy Ray. Go to at Chrissy Ray. That's my 24-year-old daughter. She's active.
Yeah.
She's crazy active. That's it, man. Oh, my son, he goes to Penn State.
Oh,
he's
nice.
18 years old. Yeah. He's a freshman. Yeah, all my kids, my son that lives with me is on it. Oh, yeah, they all on it. But they follow me, and then they get away from me.
Why?
Because they know I want to see what the hell they're talking about.
Oh, they're like blocking
you. Yeah, they're messing with me, but yeah. I know how to find them.
But are they ever like, yo, dad, like, why'd you tweet this selfie?
Like, dad,
with
stop taking pictures at Publix. Yeah, exactly. Like,
no,
on.
My daughter mess with me sometimes. They mess with me. They be like, you a corny, you a cornball. Ah, you know, they're joking. But
what about when you do the ones like, I'm waiting on my son right now or whatever?
Oh, yeah, that's what I get a kick out of that.
Yeah, daddy, I mean, what is it? Daddy school bus?
Yeah,
daddy, right?
Yeah, bus driver. In the morning, I take my kids to school. Every morning, and I sit and wait, and I don't have nothing to do. I be like, all right, let me just, what I'm gonna talk about.
Yeah, well, so personally, we don't want you to ever stop. We love it, man. Yeah,
thanks, man.
No, we know that you can't stop.
No, yo, really, can't stop, won't stop. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? But no, it's addicting, man.
Cool. So, I mean, to bring it back to basketball a little bit, I was reading an old issue of Slam pretty recently that had Paul Pierce on the cover, and you played with Paul, in Boston. When Jim O'Brien was there, and in the article you actually quoted as saying that Paul was the best small forward in the league at the time. So now that he's, you know, he officially announced he's going to retire, like, what do you have? What are some memories you have of Paul Pierce, playing with Paul Pierce as a teammate?
He grew. You know, when he first came in, he was a chip on the shoulder because he went number 10. I did the lottery, you know, for the Celtics that year. I sat in, we got the number 10 pick, and he went number 10, and he came in. Very humble young man when he came in and broke out his shell as the years went on. Got, you know, he's a gym rat. Played, he always worked on his game. Always. Good teammate. I had no problems with, you know, I had no problems when we had fun on the road and in the locker room. I'm just happy for him. What a career.
Yeah.
Wow. You know. Go down probably next to Larry Bird as the best Celtic.
Yeah, if you, up there.
You know, up there,
up there.
You know, I know Kevin Garnett was there, but nobody, he shouldn't have never left. That's one of those guys that retired, as I said, stayed on the Boston Celtics for 15, 20 years. He should have been there. It's kind of weird to see him go when he went to Brooklyn in that uniform, and then he went to Clip. He's one of those guys that he should have retired. He will go back next year and retire, but he should have stayed as a Celtic.
I mean, it's so obvious that he should retire as a Celtic, but I still thought it was kind of strange when he's on the Clippers and he's like, I'm going to retire next year as a Celtic.
I know.
It's a no-brainer.
Of course.
Great teammate. Never had nothing, you know. But he did grow. You know, he got a little. And then now I see him now voiceless in the with the media.
Yeah. He's setting up for his next career.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He was never like that. You know, as you saw the progress, year to year went by. He was just a hard worker. Really, never complained. When we was on the down years, when he was in Celtics, and these down years, he just put up numbers and kept playing. I got a lot of respect for him.
I've always respected that too about him. Mm-hmm. Like, just from a fan standpoint, you know, he really stuck it out through the lean years and. You know, it paid off in the end. And a lot of guys will try and get the hell out when things go bad.
No, I was happy for him when he got his championship ring, man. I said he deserved it.
All right, so you're retired. He's about to be retired. Yeah. So I feel like you could tell us now what kind of dude was he like going out with, like partying with?
He was a wild dude.
Really?
He changed his life. You know, I got changed or put some control, you know, in it. But I ain't gonna go into details. But we partied in Boston.
Yeah,
we partied hard. That whole team. So.
Yeah, that was a fun team.
Yeah, that was a fun team. We partied
Antoine
hard.
Antoine Walker was on there too.
Yeah, Antoine, you know he balled out. I used to call him Fleet Bank because he walked around with the mini pouch with so much money in it. If I couldn't make it to the ATM, I'd be like, yo, let me get $300. He was like, then I give it back to you when I get to the ATM.
Wow.
Yeah,
we
have fun, man.
I imagine, given that, there had to be some serious, like, gambling, card games.
They do it. I think they cut it out now. All teams, when they travel west, gambled on the plane.
Yeah.
I just never been a gambler, but I think they cut it out now. You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to reel it back in.
Veer off in a lot of different directions.
Abe always does this to me. I'll be like asking like a serious question. Abe's like, so yo, like, what were the clubs like? And I'm just trying to reel it back in. But you mentioned, you know, you represent the Celtics at the draft lottery. But going back even further to when you were drafted by the Nets, you know, playing so close to home, you know, after growing up in Queens and you know, after playing at Georgia Tech and then coming back to the Nets, like, was it tough playing at home? Like, the Nets structure wasn't great back then, and then I'm sure you had a lot of family and friends trying to, you know, coming back into your life. So what was that experience like for you?
It actually was good. Yeah. Like, a lot of people said, you know, wow, he going back home. It was great for me. My mother was here, my high school coach, my mentors. It's just what you said. We go back, the Nets organization wasn't stable.
Right.
You know, we had seven owners. We practiced at the APA trucking facility. We shared lockers with truckers.
Wow.
You know what I mean? But
what?
We at the APA trucking facility over in Secaucus, right over there, we shared. That's where our practice was at. It just really wasn't stable, but we had very good talent there.
Yeah.
Myself, Derek Coleman, Drazen Petrovic, Chris Morris, Benoit Benjamin, Dwayne Cinches, Sam Bowie.
Was Mahorn on the team? Yeah.
Mookie Blaylock. Yeah. We had a very talented team. We was in the East that was tough with Michael Jordan and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
With Brad Daugherty, Marpet, Shaq and Penny and Orlando. So no, it just didn't work, I think, because of the ownership. I'm not throwing nobody under the bus with that, but you gotta have a stick. It starts up top.
Yeah, we've seen that
coaches
in all sports. Yeah.
Coaches, players was getting, you know, in and out of the Nets while I was there. It just wasn't signed. Then Drazen Petrovic passed away. That did it.
Yeah.
It did it.
Any follow up in?
Well, I mean, I'm just stuck on the sharing the locker with the truckers.
I mean, that's like, you probably didn't even do stuff like that in high school, right?
No, yeah, my high school probably exactly on the real. My Malloy, we had a small locker room, but it was long lockers. We in APA truck, we had the short locker. I was like,
welcome to the NBA.
Yeah. So it was a little different, you know. It just was all different over there. But you know, it was great for me. I loved being with the Nets because I was home.
Yeah.
My mother lived in Long Island. My friend, it was like I was back. Living back home.
Yeah, and I mean, you said now looking back, like your biggest inspiration, one of your biggest inspirations for playing ball was so you could set your mother up in a house. So you know. Just being able to see that and be close to that, just to see how happy she was, must have been special for you too.
Yeah, she lived. I wanted to say, just not the house, but she lived a carefree life for 20 years.
Yeah.
20 years, you know what I mean? So I was blessed. My mission was accomplished, and went from there. It was awesome.
Cool. So I feel like a lot of guys get asked about that a lot, as far as playing in their home or close to home. And some will say, you know, it's great because they have, like, the infrastructure of the family and friends to help them with certain things, like getting tickets or whatever. And some will say it's too distracting. They'd rather be somewhere else where they can just focus on ball. So where do you kind of come down on that? Like, what was it like for you, you know, that experience versus other cities?
No, being in them was unique for me
because
I was a child star here.
Right.
And now I'm making money.
Right.
Like, it's interesting because I ain't have money when I was, you know, in high school and all that. So I was happy. I was like, wow, now I'm really going to live the city life.
Yeah.
Now I can come over here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had to stay in Queens. So I was excited to be back home and do different things and really explore New York City the way I can now.
Like with money.
Yeah, with money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I did it. But I was, you know, tell you this truth, Sacramento Kings was the third pick. They recruited me. Mm-hmm. They was like, I went out there. They was like, you're our pick. You're the number. If I would have went number three, I was their pick. The general manager was Reynolds. He was the general manager at the time. And they recruited me. And I was like, whoa, I went out there. I never been out to Sacramento. I've been, you know, California and stuff in L.A. But Sacramento, I was like, man, this is way out there. I don't know what to expect. So draft day, I was like mixed up 50-50.
Yeah.
Because I knew, you know, the Nets had the second pick.
Who went number one that year?
Larry Johnson.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And then, so Bobby Hurley, did he go three?
Billy Owens was third pick.
Okay, Because I remember Hurley played for the Kings too, right?
He went the year after me.
Oh, okay.
You know, he went seven, like, of a draft.
Hey, the top five that year is pretty dope.
Yeah.
Larry Johnson, Kenny Anderson, Billy Owens, Dikembe Mutombo, Steve Smith.
Yeah, wow. That's top five,
That's a nice little top five there.
Yeah.
So, you know, you keep saying I was a child prodigy, I was a child star, which you were, but I guess we haven't really, like, dove into it. So, you know, why don't you just take, like, 30 seconds just to list off your accolades, you know, leading scorer in New York City for quite a while, up until 2005, right?
Yeah, 20 years, I guess, what, Lance Stevenson or...
I think Telfair broke it first, yeah.
He probably ain't break it. My high school coach used to get mad because they went to public school. They don't keep records right. I went to Catholic school. We keep this. My high school.
The books were tight.
Yeah, my high school coach used to get mad. He's like, I don't think they broke it, but you got to live with it. Records are meant to be broken. But now that 4-year all city,
yeah.
You know, myself and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wow. hasn't been done. You know, my high school jersey in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big accomplishment.
Amazing.
You know, all the records. Not only that, but I played in the city, you know, in the playgrounds, playing a lot of summer leagues, got a lot of trophies and awards. 2 city championships. You know, we used to play at Fordham University, Rose Hill, the championship game. We played against Malik Sealy, rest in peace,
yeah.
Talent Time yeah. High School. The big, you know, those games were sold out. Then we played the second year I won it. We played against Cardinal Hayes. We won the championship over Jamal Mashburn.
Wow.
He was on the Cardinal Hayes then. I think he was a sophomore at the time. I think I was a junior, something like that. But
he was from Queens too, right?
He's from Esplanade Gardens. He's from Harlem.
Oh, okay. Right okay, there. Okay.
Yeah, he's from Harlem. But you know, it's just a lot of basketball was being played when I was in New York, man. That's how we grew up. Man, if you grew up in the city.
Yeah. And then you were, I mean, playing in left rack, like, how were you ever not on the court? Or, like, did they have to come look for you at night when you and your mother?
That was the, you know, they knew where to find. If I wasn't there, then I had problems, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But I was always on the court, and it was special, you know, playing in the streets of New York. It made me tough, you know, yeah, being a smaller guard. It made you tough getting in the lane, getting pushed down, using your body well, fending, you know, defending the defender off. You learn little tricks of trade, you know, how to defend yourself when playing in the playground.
What kind of, like, growing up, what was the, like, what did you guys play to? Was it ones and twos, twos and threes?
We played 21. We played to 32 by twos, though.
Wow.
Okay.
I remember that. 32s by twos. Or now, you know, by seven by ones, you know, the game is seven, so everybody mm-hmm. can get a chance to play
yeah.
on the court. But it was fierce competitiveness in the playgrounds of New York. Some of those guys was awesome, probably better than me, but just they didn't have the self-discipline to move, to go forward.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, when you look at the game now and, you know, the way smart point guards are dominating, yeah. like, you know, Kemba. Steph Curry, Dame, even Isaiah Thomas up in Boston, you know, and you compare that to the way you played and the rule changes, like, how do you think you would fare in today's NBA?
About the same with what they're doing
yeah.
because the rule changes. You can't really touch nobody.
Yeah.
It's freelance, and that's great. Entertainment, you know, they want the high scores,
yeah.
you know, 115, 110. You know, my era was 78 to 85. That was right. hard on the eyes, but it was competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's competitiveness, though, you know. You know, it was a lot of defense being played, a lot of guys getting roughed up.
Who's your favorite player to watch right now?
Well, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving. LeBron James, I love his game. He's my favorite player. But I love all the guards, Russell Westbrook, Damian Lillard. It's a great time in the league for point guards.
Yeah.
You know, it's for awesome. Sure.
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm curious your thoughts on, like, a guy like James Harden flipping over and playing some point guard, too.
It's awesome. I joked about it on Twitter, you know, like, months ago before the season started. It was like, James Harden's going to play point guard. I was like, yeah, right. I got to take that back. I'm wrong. He got to be up there leading candidate for MVP. He's ball. He's great.
Yeah.
I didn't even, you know, and I think D'Antonio with his system and his, you know, he's got him playing like Steve Nash again.
Yeah.
Steve Nash was a 2-time MVP. So and he's left-handed. He's big. He knows how to – he's crafty. He knows how to draw fouls, and he can shoot the three, got handle. He's sick with it. He's having a great
year.
He
makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time. He's unbelievable.
I was telling, you know, when I train kids and talk about the game, his pace,
mm-hmm.
he sees everything.
Yeah.
He's always, like, surveying.
He's in control, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, so methodical, you know. Yeah. Like, every even when he Euro steps, everything is, like, 2 steps ahead of everybody else.
So,
yeah, it's impressive.
He's having a great year.
And he's a lefty.
And that's the, you know, icing on the cake. Because he's lefty and he's a big leg. He's like 6'5", and you just can't do nothing with it.
How much of a, like, did that coming up, did that give you like an advantage?
Yeah, because you play, you right. I'm left-handed. You're gonna jump to my right side
naturally.
So I'm so I'm able to get my left off. Yeah. And with my size, I was, you know, growing up, was interesting. You know, I came like 6'1", 6'2", was pretty big, you know, for point guards.
Right.
Now it's a freak. You know, when I played in the league, you know, I was good size for point guard, but I think Anthony Hardaway was the freakish. You know, Magic was first.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson, 6'9", point. But then came Anthony Hardaway in the East and everything. He was big. So, you know, when I played, you know, in high school and in the playgrounds, you know, I had my reach. I had my reach mostly over my defensive player.
Did you ever like pull up at a park that maybe you never played at or whatever, and you know that they don't know that you're left-handed, all of a sudden you're just busting them because of that?
Yeah, all the time. You know, I just, when I played, they to, you know, play pickup ball.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Nobody's doing scout reports.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
They don't know, you know.
It probably takes like several possessions for
that.
Maybe.
If they thinking like that, some of them ain't thinking like that. They just want the ball back so they can go back at me.
Exactly.
Kenny, like, I don't know, you know, you've lived in Florida for a good amount of time now, but so I don't know how, you know, vested you are in, or how much you pay attention to, you know, kids in New York now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we were talking outside about Hamidou Diallo, who's from New York. There's a kid in the Bronx named Isaiah Washington who's going to Minnesota. Jose Alvarado is going to Georgia Tech. So there's like a nice little crop of kids who are starting to really put New York City point guards back on the map a little bit. So, you know, being that you're one of the, if not the greatest New York City point guard of all time, you know, do you feel like your legacy, like you have something to do with that? And you know, they you know, if they're not paying homage now, that, you know, they should look up, do their history a little bit?
Yeah, no, it's just different generations, man. Yeah, God bless her, man. I'm glad, you know, being from New York, seeing the struggle, you know, living in this environment, and guys can use basketball to better themselves, go to college, get a scholarship, better themselves, be able to take care of their parents and their family. So I don't look at it like that. My generation, I'm a historian. You know, I think LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, the great players, they know the history.
Yeah.
Now it's just different. You know, me, I always give love to the point guards before me. And it was, you know, it has to be, and it always will be, Pearl Washington, Kenny Smith, Mark Jackson, you know, Kenny Hutchinson. You don't even know these guys. Kenny Patterson, Boo Harvey. These are like great point guards before me. I wanted to be them. You know, right. I wanted to have everything, you know, each one of those guys' game. And that's what I did, you know, try to take something from each one of those guys, put it in my game. Rod Strickland, who was a great point guard. So these kids now, they don't care. They don't think about that. That's why this era, LeBron James is their Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Right.
You know, they don't know Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
they just see the rings, and all they know is the Jays.
I was about to say that.
Your retro, when the Jays coming out.
Yeah.
They could care less who Jordan is.
That dude who makes
the
sneakers.
Make the sneakers. Yeah.
So when you talk to, you said your youngest is 15, right?
Yeah.
So, like, when you're having a conversation with him, do you try and say, hey, like, you know, Chris Paul is great, but here's Rod Strickland's video. He's great too. Like,
no,
you trying to
no. They leave me. My sons know. My kids know, come, you know, what their friends talk about, and they've been around me in certain environments and all that. How they act and treat me, I let them be. Like, who they like, they like. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's I say this, you know, with all my run is over. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, I had a great run in the NBA for 14 years and two-time, you know, All-American at Georgia Tech, you know, all the accolades and everything, man. I had a great run, and I'm a fan now. I just, you know, hey, you know, come watch you play. You know, my man Brandon Jennings, you know, I'm a big fan of his. Yeah. He was a big fan of mine growing up, and so I always watch for him. And
Shout out to that Slam story that you guys did together.
That was a great article and great time. So I just watch everybody, and, you know, me, you don't got to worry about me. I've done it. I'm good.
Yeah,
cool.
I think that's cool. Like, and even it kind of even relates back to the fact that you're on Twitter so much and you like Twitter. Like, a lot of the
– It always comes back to Twitter.
Well, always, But a lot of the older heads sometimes would be like, man, this new generation, like, blah, blah, blah.
These kids are soft. Blah, blah. Like,
so, I like the fact that you're just like, yeah, just let them do their thing. It's the next – this is how it is now, whatever.
Let them do their thing. I'm surprised – and honored and happy when one of those young kids be like, yo, Kenny Anderson.
Right.
I'm like, oh, I was doing it when you was in Pampers and you remember me? Yo, that's cool. You
right, know what right, I mean? Exactly.
I know they don't know me, you know what I mean? But the thing about it, which is good, the social media, the YouTube, you think they got that.
Right.
That's what saved me. You know what I'm saying? Right. That's what saved Jordan and that generation. He was like, yo, just YouTube them. And they see all the
Google
moves
me.
And they be like, yeah, Google me. So it's awesome on that note, but I'm good, man.
Yeah.
You know, we talked a little bit about before we came in here, the Champions Classic that was played last night. And, you know, you said you were watching, like, Frank Mason and Devontae Graham. And, you know, just seeing undersized point guards, like, knowing that it can be tough to be an undersized point guard, like, you know, I don't even know where I'm going with this, but I guess, like, when you're watching college ball, how much has it changed since you were there, like, as far as one-and-dones and then watching these kids now, you know, watching four-year point guards now, how much of their game compared to yours?
Most of them are great. Like, the guy, Frank Mason III has some, you know, he probably, you know, the way he plays off the pick and roll was identical to the way I played off the pick and roll.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Around the basket, the way he lays the ball up. And all, but makes it different is I'm left-handed, so I'm just a little more. And I think I'm a little taller than him. So, and the game's changed a little bit with the college ball and the one and done. But like I said, man, everything goes around, everything changes. A lot of these kids use basketball to better themselves, to get money, to work. That's what they have to do. So school is not as important to some of them. And I get it. You know, it wasn't nothing like I love going to school and do the work, but I had to go because I didn't want the basketball to be taken away from me.
Right.
I had to apply myself. But I just think a lot of that is going on. Guys are just going to college to play ball or to get to the next level. And you can't blame them because you got the overseas guys that's playing for money at 14 and 15 and 16. But there's also, if you're not in that boat, if you're not in that bowl, you might have to play for 4 years.
Yeah.
Get your education, get your degree, go to school, have a great college career, and get that education. And some of those guys are making the wrong decisions because they got agents and guys talking to them in their ear, and they jump. Then they don't get drafted. They can't come back to school. Then they go overseas. That don't work. And then they wind up coming back home doing nothing.
So that's funny you mentioned this because we just had this discussion about another documentary, the one that Showtime did about Ben Simmons and his 1 year at LSU. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he basically in that he was like, I'm not even going to go to class. Like, I'm here for like 6 months. And then the day after their season ended, he just left. So like, what is your opinion of the way that, like, the one and done rule for
it's
these top dudes now?
It's freedom of speech. It's free. You know, that's what's going on now. But I didn't like that. I didn't like he said that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I just think it's evident. You know, certain things don't need to be said. You know, I've been in the college system. I did 2 years. I went to school at Georgia. I had to go to school. I had to. Or you was going, you know, they didn't play over there. Yeah. Certain schools.
But that was like
less.
A surprise. Like, even when in your era, like, to go 2 years at college and then come out, it was like, whoa, like, he's leaving early? That's crazy.
I don't got no beef with him leaving school early, but I just think some things don't mess it up.
So you say, like, just go through the motions and then...
No.
Like, he should just show up in class and
he just disrespect... I don't know. Just don't say nothing.
Yeah.
On that, you know what I mean? But, like I said, it's freedom of speech and everybody's doing it. But I just got a little... And I know, because my documentary is raw and honest... You know what I'm saying? So Showtime, that was raw and honest.
Yeah, exactly.
But NCAA, you know, at times and all everything, it's full of it because they're making a whole lot of money and these kids is not getting – nobody's getting paid. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to do something about that, a stipend or something, because it's just – it's not good. And like you said, Ben Simmons, now that his talent, I was wondering – I say this, you that talented, why are you going to school?
Yeah.
Go straight to the pro. That's why they – I don't know sometime about the age. I get the thing – just – guys overseas go and make money at a young age. Just swipe that off, man. If you're that talented, you feel that you can go and make money and play and be on that level, go pro. Yeah. Don't go to college.
Kenny, just, you know, based on your experiences, your life, you know, you see so many guys in the offseason now, you know, they hire these trainers, they put all this money towards training. But, you know, from the way you're talking, from you know, the way your life played out, you know, wouldn't it be more beneficial for them to, like, get a manager, you know, meet with managers and business partners and, you know, the training, like, if you're a baller, like, you can ball, right? I mean, how much more training is going to put you over the top? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Duh, that's what I'm saying. When you get to the league, man, you know how to play basketball, yeah. Number one. Number two, you know how to take care of your body. The great ones do it. Kevin Durant, LeBron with his trainer, D-Wade, Steph Curry. Guys know how to, you're absolutely right. You know what I mean? You could train, you know. But also, I think a lot of them now, the top guys are doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. Far with business management, meeting and, you know, different companies, trying to better themselves off the court. It's a beautiful thing to see. Back in my era, in my years, guys wasn't doing it as much. You know, all we cared about is just playing basketball and all the other stuff. Other things wasn't important. But I think now it's coming. I think it's coming from guys from failure of the other generation.
Right, right.
And guys are starting to realize that. So it's helping them.
One thing about training in the off season, you must remember to take a video of yourself doing it and put it on Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat. Or else you don't get credit for doing it. This is what all the dudes do now.
Yeah. That's another thing.
I mean, I always feel like, you know, you got to give your body some time to relax, too. So it's, in the off season, it's meant to rest. So if you're training hard every single day, I think it has a lot to do with the uptick in injuries as well. And people taking time off, not playing 82 games now. Because, like, back in your day, playing 82 games was nothing.
Standard.
Yeah, like John Stockton was 40 years old his final year. He played all 82 games. You just never see that anymore.
I think that's the only thing I got. You know, I'm a fan. I take my son to the Heat game sometimes. I think he's a big fan of Derrick Rose. About 2 years ago, he sits out. Just because of rest.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit, man, I got tickets for my son. He wants to see Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
This shit is wrong. I don't like it because they get more money. I'm not a bitter old guy that retired.
Right.
They get a lot of money, man. They sitting out on rest.
Yeah.
We could never go into the office saying, like, if I came in on, yeah. You know, we playing the Knicks or whatever, I'm like, hey, I'm coach, I want to sit out, you know, this game or two. I've been playing a lot of minutes. Let me get rest tonight. And they probably throw me out the office. You know what I'm saying? Back then, it wasn't happening. So it's kind of and they still trying to cut back on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they making millions, zillions of dollars.
Well, and I think that's something that gets, you know, a little lost in translation. Like, the common fan, you know, is paying, you know, say they're taking their family out. They go to one game a year. They're paying $300 for four tickets, what have you. Then they're spending money at the stadium.
Buying the jersey of the guy who's sitting out.
They're going to see Derrick Rose just because you brought him up earlier. And he's not playing. And it's like, you know, I just dropped $400 or $500 to go watch my son's favorite player play. And he's not even playing.
We brought someone in there for about two quarters. We was like, I'm you ready? My son was like, come on, man. Because he wanted to see Derrick Rose. But I feel it.
Yeah.
I feel it. That's the, you know, the balance. But I just the lead is the lead, and it's at a great place right now.
For sure,
it's making
absolutely
a lot of money. But that's my own issue. Only issue is these guys, they're a little softer now
because
you got to play games, man. You got to play. You just got to play regardless.
Right.
That's true.
That is true. Kenny, you know, a couple more things before we let you go. You know, you spoke or touched on it briefly. You know, you came out that, you know, you were abused as a child. So I know last year you were out in Portland doing some work with kids, right? So, you know, working with the youth, is that something you hold close to your heart? You know, the way you talk about your kids and the way you just talk about coaching, like, is that where you see, like, your life maybe going, working with the kids some more, either helping them on the court, off the court, just being a mentor?
That's why I got a gym out in Tampa, the clinic. I started it right now with the Breakfast Club with Kenny Anderson, working with the youth. It started with the high school kids, but also I'm trying to get to the point where I get the elite college players, you know, going to the NBA, guys about to go to the NBA combine, come work out with Kenny Anderson for the week.
Yeah.
But not only, then I grab them. We got office space, conference rooms, you know, I grab them and put a team together of just life lessons and trying to help them. You know, the do's and the don'ts. And I think who would be better than me, you know?
I've seen it all,
done it all. And I got a good knowledge and IQ of basketball, especially point guards. I know definitely, you know, what it takes to, you know, to play in the NBA and so on. So I love the youth. It's all about the youth. You know, because I've gotten abused early in my career or my life. And I'm just trying to give back. My mother, so my mother passed in 2005. She wanted me to, you know, change my ways, change my life, and help others. So it's really big for me to just give back. And help. If I can, you know, help two, three people before it's over, man, I did my part, man. It's cool.
That's beautiful, man. That's great. I had something I can't remember. It slipped my mind. Eve, help me out.
No, I was just going to say that, like, I don't know anything about your political leanings, but I feel like the world is going to need, or this country is going to need a lot of that now in the next coming year. So I'm glad that you're, you know, out here doing that kind of stuff.
This is what I want to ask you. So what's next for the documentary? You know, you had it in the premiere in New York. You're having another tonight. Today's Wednesday. So if you're in New York, please go. Hopefully you peep that. So what's the next step for the documentary?
Well, they'll do the business side of it. Yeah. You know, Jill Campbell and Barry Greenstein. They'll do the better side. I think HBO looking at it, Showtime, they looking at it.
Nice.
You know, it's going to be in some more festivals.
Cool.
It's all about advertising it now. It dropped, so, you know, I think I got some good reviews in the media and all that, and hopefully Netflix, everybody get on it, and it'll get out and get sold, and a lot of people could see it, you know. I think it's a well-put-together doc.
Cool. So you're going to, like, start hitting the road, go to some different festivals and cities?
Yeah, that's what's going on, different cities, but I'm just happy. And I thank God that it started in my city.
That's
New
great,
York
man.
City was
yeah.
awesome. And I, hey, man, I got a lot of love Saturday. You know, Larry Johnson, you know, big up to him. He came out.
So Dennis Scott.
Dennis
Scott,
Brian Oliver, Coach Crimmins. I think my man Vin Baker stopped in there, man. So it was a lot of love, man. So I appreciate the guys that came out.
Cool. I got a few random questions for you just off of, like, scrolling through your tweets and stuff. first one, well, you posted, like, a picture not too long ago of just like all your, you were with like all your jerseys from your career.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just looking at thinking that a lot of those were like super dope jerseys. So what was like your favorite jersey that you ever got to, or looking at it now, or that you like got to play in where you're like, this is fresh?
My favorite jersey, man, my favorite jersey is my Malloy high school jersey, the light blue one, and my second is my Georgia Tech gold one.
Yeah.
It's sick.
Yo,
those two jerseys are sick.
I've been looking for, because I have the Portland one, but I've been trying to get a Kenny Anderson Georgia Tech jersey. There's just nowhere to be found.
They got to make some money, man. Sign me a deal and go back in the throwbacks, man.
Yeah,
come on, man.
There we go. All right. And then also, there was some kind of Uber versus cab debate you were having with yourself in New York.
Wow, I was
go ahead.
Running around, man, after the premiere, man. You know, I got a little trick I used to do because it was wild. It was wilder for a black man to get a cab in New York.
Yeah.
So I would throw our concierge out there first. I'd be like, go get a cab. Or somebody passed me in the hotel, a young lady, I'd be like, go hail a cab. And then when they hail a cab, I run out and jump in. I used to do all type of tricks. But I was out there, and because it was a close distance, so I said, you know what, I'm going to grab a cab. Mm-hmm. But then Uber, I got the Uber app. So I didn't know what to do, you know what I'm saying? And I wound up going Uber because the cabs kept passing me.
So when you hop in the Uber, did the drivers recognize you?
You know what, the last two Ubers recognized me. And he said, I know who you was. I said, oh, okay, how you doing? He said, I was a big fan of yours when you was the Nets and all that. So I just, you know, keep quiet, man. But in Florida, it happened once or twice. I kind of just sit back, don't say nothing.
Yeah.
But it's been coming up.
I feel like you would be tweeting, like, selfies with the Uber driver.
I do. You ain't get those.
Yeah, I've seen them. But I just figured maybe in New York there would have been some more.
I do. I'll probably do one tonight just for you.
Cool. Yeah, please do. And then the last thing was just, all right, sitting at this table right now, we have a Giants fan, Redskins fan, and a Cowboys fan.
Come on,
so you
man.
Can go. I'll give you 20 seconds to go off on the Cowboys.
You know my crew. It's something special happening this year with my Cowboys, so I'm happy. You saw the interview that Romo said. That's my guy, man. I love Romo. I lived and died with him. But, you know, right now our future looks bright.
Yeah.
And Romo came out. He was a class act, man. Listen, man.
Even as a Redskins fan,
He had no choice in a way. But, you know, he had a choice. He could act like a dick, you know, excuse my language, you know what I'm saying? And just don't give Dak no encouragement, just sit back and wait. But he didn't. So he understands it, man. And, you know, I've been a Cowboy fan since 1981, Danny White days. You know, that's how I became a Cowboy fan. And I did a podcast show couple of years ago, and he heard that, and he sent me a Super Bowl ball, Daddy White. So I got much love. And,
I still hate the Cowboys.
I know you. Redskins, they hate us. We hate all. You know, we hate
a lot of hate in this room right now.
A lot of hate, man.
Nothing but love.
We rolling right now. We on top right now.
It makes me so mad. Yo, Thanksgiving though, big game.
Who's playing?
Skins Cowboys.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
The Cowboys and the Redskins and Giants. It's gonna be battles. It ain't over, but we.
I can't believe the division is so good. It's supposed to be trash. The Eagles are in last place. They're 5-4. Is that right?
I don't know. I don't follow the NFL like that, man. That's you guys. Yeah. Cool. All right, Kenny. Thanks for taking time out on the Cigar Wednesday, man. Yeah, we really appreciate it. you know, best of luck with everything you got going on. You know, I think I can speak for everyone at Slam that, you know, we're just so happy things are working out for you and things are going well for you now. So, yeah, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Always love for Slam, man. Appreciate y'all.
All right, thank you.